Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It's nice to be back.
Yeah, we're happy you're back also.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I spent the last 2 weeks driving around different parts of the United States of America. I was there during the election as well, which was exciting, although don't blame me, I had nothing to do with it. I didn't vote for anybody because I don't have a vote. Only in Israel do I have a vote, which I suppose is not a bad thing. No, not in England either. No, I don't have a vote in England, but that's a story for another time. Perhaps inspired by my travels around America and with some trepidation in venturing into an area that perhaps I'm not qualified to talk about, I'd like to talk about Thanksgiving. Because as anyone here, certainly who is American, will know, tonight is Erev Thanksgiving, and tomorrow is Thanksgiving, and people will be having different celebrations. And I'd like to use this as an opportunity to have a series of shiurim between now and perhaps the middle to the end of next month of December about matters to do with non-Jews and our relationships with non-Jews and non-Jewish holidays. There are a few other non-Jewish holidays coming up in the next few weeks. And I think these are very fascinating topics, and looking a little bit maybe at Avodah Zorah, Christianity, churches, all sorts of interesting things like that. So I'd like to kick off today with a discussion about Chukat Hagoy. Chukat Hagoy is a very fascinating sugya, which we're going to look at today with specific reference to Thanksgiving. We'll have a look at the sugya in general. Thank you. We'll have a look at Thanksgiving in particular, and then we'll have a look at three contemporary voices on the issue of celebrating Thanksgiving and eating turkey, for that matter, for those of you who are into eating turkey. Let's start with the halachic issues. There are a few psukim involved. The first pasuk I'd like to look at number one, is in Shemot. It says, "Lo yishtachav ele Eloheihem." Do not bow down to their gods. "Lo yitavdein." Do not serve them. "V'lo ta'aseh kamaaseihem." And don't even do anything like they do it. "Ki harein ta'aseh v'shaber t'shaber ma'tzeikosem." You should smash up all the idols that they're dealing with. Now that clearly is in a context of idolatry. Don't do what they do is clearly talking about Avodah Zarah. The question is, does that extend beyond it? And the answer is yes, it does, into an area which is called Darachei Ha'emori, the ways of the Amorites, okay, the Amorim, which here is taken to refer to non-Jews generally. Rashi number 2 on Avodah Zarah, we'll see the sugya in Avodah Zarah soon, where he talks, there it says something is loimi darachei mori, for whatever reason, it's not there a prohibited action of darachei mori. And Rashi explains, einu mi darachei mori lachush, because darachei mori we'd have to be concerned about, lo ta'aseh kama'aseihem. This pasuk of lo ta'aseh kama'aseihem, don't follow their ways, is a prohibition of darachei mori. The Tosefta gives us a list, so this is not an exhaustive list, there are many other examples of things which Chazal considered to be Darchei Ha'emori, the ways of the non-Jews. Let's look at a few of these. Number 3. Elu Darchei Midarchei Ha'emori. Elu Dvarim, sorry, Midarchei Ha'emori. The following things are included in Darchei Ha'emori. And it gives an interesting list. We're not going to look at this list in detail. That's not our share for today. Some of these things are haircuts. Hairstyles. Hamasape Kumi. Someone who cuts their hair in a kumi style. Kumi, the Beforeshim say, is that they leave the hair at the back and they shave all the hair at the front. They just have like a long thing coming out of the back. There's also a tonsil, like a priest. One of these is also Ha'oisi Bloiris, another kind of hairstyle which maybe can be kind of Mohican or whatever at the front. Okay, Hamagada Lejugada, I'm not getting into that. Hamagoreris Benamin Amesim, somebody who drags their child between the dead, some kind of ritual superstition. Hakosha Metulteles Al Yerecha, who ties a special string onto their thigh. Interestingly, the next one, Chut Adam Al Esbo, someone who wears a red string, okay, around their finger, in this case, is Darchei Moni, I'm not getting into red strings now. Or now someone who does a certain thing with pebbles, throwing them into the lakes or the seas. Now these things are not in and of themselves Avodah Zarah. There's no Avodah Zarah specifically of wearing a red string. Okay, that's another discussion. But it's Darche Emor. So that's one issue. We'll have to see whether Thanksgiving relates in any way to Darche Emor. Just because non-Jews do things, it doesn't necessarily make it Darche Emor. There are all sorts of non-Jewish rules that we follow. You know, in England we drive on the left, and in America they drive on the right. That's not Darche Emor. You know, I'm going to turn around and say, well, you know, it's a Goyish custom. In Israel, I think they take that view. They just drive anywhere. Because maybe that's the Darche Emor issue. Obviously, non-Jews do all sorts of things which are not Darche Emor. They're just regular rules of society. How are we going to distinguish? The other psukim deals specifically with Chukat Hagoy. Look at number four. Kamasa Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yishavtem Ba Lo Tavzu. Don't act like they used to act in Egypt where you used to live. And Canaan, where I'm bringing you, also loisasu, don't do like they do. Don't follow their chukim of these people. Now, what are those chukim? What does that mean, the chukim? There are Rishonim, it must be said, that say that this is specifically and only relating to Mitzrayim and Canaan. And it doesn't relate to anywhere else, in which case it would be irrelevant today. But most Rishonim do not take that view, and they say that these are just examples. You came from Mitzrayim, you're going to Canaan, but anywhere that you live where the non-Jews have chukim, we'll have to look at what the word chok means, some kind of a law maybe which is a ritual of some kind, maybe it doesn't have a clear reason, you are not allowed to do that. There's another pasuk I didn't put it there later in Vayikra, which says, Lo tselchu b'chukat hagoy, there he doesn't say anything specifically about Egypt or Canaan, and therefore there are two Isurim of Darche Emori and Chukat Hagoi, and these seem to be Doraisa issues. What are the parameters of these issues? Yes.
So can I ask, is there an element of intention why you might be doing this?
Yes, definitely.
Come around and say, well,
yes, we'll see. We'll 100%. We will see if there is an issue as to whether you're doing things with good reason, with justification, because you understand this is sensible. You're doing them just because people do them. We'll see that. We'll see that coming up soon. The Gemara discusses this in the context of an interesting question, which is, there used to be a custom in pagan kings, when the king died, they would burn all of the property of the king. And the question is, can we do that as well with our king? When we used to have kings, is that called Chukat Hagoy, or is that called a legitimate Jewish custom too? Have a look at number five. The Mishnah in Avodah Zarah talks at the beginning of Avodah Zarah about not doing business with non-Jews, idolatrous non-Jews, it should be said, that's an important point, and we need to discuss in another share what indeed is Avodah Zarah and what isn't Avodah Zarah. It's really not straightforward these days, but idolatry, you're not allowed to do business with an idolatrous non-Jew 3 days before the festival of that non-Jew. And the Gemara discusses why that is. Is it because of you're helping them to do Avodah Zarah, or you're helping them to give thanks to their God, whatever? But then the Mishnah wants to list, so what are these festivals that are included in idolatrous festivals? Number five. The Elu Eidehem Shel Oivdei Kochavim. These are the festivals that the Mishnah was talking about when it said don't do business before the festival. Calendar, which of course our word calendar comes from calendar. Okay? The Saturna, Saturnalia, the Kartisim. Now, I'm not getting into what these are because these are all Christmas, New Year issues. Because these are all the festivals that happen at the end of the winter, or the middle of the winter, I should say, around the winter solstice, where there were different festivals which, again, in our time, morphed into our Christmas, Boxing Day, New Year, whole celebration time in the non-Jewish world. We'll talk about those another time, but they were originally pagan festivals. Yom Ginutia Shel Malcheihem, the day of the anniversary of the coronation of the king, we're not getting into that so much, but Yom HaLeidah, and the birthday of the king, interesting, the queen's birthday, the queen has two birthdays in England, you should just know, an official birthday and an actual birthday, don't ask me to remember what the days are, oh you see, very important today, the 21st of April, okay, fine, so Yom HaLeidah, the day of the birth of the monarch, the Yom HaMisa, and the anniversary of the death of the monarch. Divrei Rebbe Meir. This is Rebbe Meir's view. The Chachamim come in and say, and this is where we're interested, no, not any anniversary of the death. Kal Misa Sheyesh Bo Sreifa, if there was an official ritual burning at the king's death of the king's possessions, then Yesh Ba Avodas Chachamim. That's a sign that there's an Avodah Zarah going on here. The Sheyesh Bo Sreifa, but if there was no ritual burning, that's fine. Machlokes here, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, of whether the death of the king is fine. Chachamim say no, only if there's a ritual building. Aval Yom, and then he goes on, Yom Tigalacha, Zikna, Veloyot, and other things which are not considered to be Avodah Zarah. We are focused just now on this issue of the day of the burning of the property of the king. Because the Gemara then asks an interesting question. What is the deal with the burning of this property? Number 6. Yom Aleda Veloma Yisa. The day of the death of the king. Michlal, this implies, the Rabbanon Savre, that at least the rabbis who said it has to be when there was a burning, that's when there's a problem, they Savre, Srefa Chuka Hi, that Srefa, the burning of the property of the king, is a Chuka. Chuka means Chuka Tagoi. That's why it's a problem. Because it's a Chuka Tagoi, this is a sign that this is a non-Jewish thing. So the Gemara says, this is a problem. The Hatanya, don't we have another Brisa elsewhere that says, Sofim ala malachim v'lodachem ori. We are allowed to do that too. We used to have a minhag, the Jewish people will see there's a pasuk in Tanakh, that we also used to burn the property of the king at the death of the king, says the Gemara, and that's not darchei amori. So what are they talking about? Why are they identifying this as darchei amori? The ichukahi, if really it's darchei amori, anan hechi sarfinan, how could we ever do this? We would be prohibited from doing this. The haksiv is in the original b'chukateim lo selechu. Ella says this Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Lekula Alma, everyone actually agrees, Srefa Lav Chukahi. Burning is actually not a sign of Avodah Zarah, Ella Chashivusahi, it's just a sign of the Chashivus of the king. So this Gemara seems to clearly say that burning the property of the king is not an Avodah Zarah. It's not Chukat Agoy. The problem comes, why did they burn it? We'll see right now. The problem comes that a Gemara in Sanhedrin seems to say the opposite. And this is the launch point for our discussion of Thanksgiving. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah seems to say clearly and unanimously that the burning of the property of the king is not Chukat HaGoy. In number 7, we ask the same question in Sanhedrin, another Gemara, the Hatanya Sarfin El Malachim B'loy Midarchei Mori, quotes the same din. Then we also are allowed to burn the property of the king, and it's when he dies, and it's not darchei mori. So the Gemara asks here again, heichi sarfin, and how could we do this? The haksiv, isn't it written u'v'chukaseihim lo selechu? Isn't it chukas agoy? Same question as we already saw in Avodah Zarah, but different answer. Here the Gemara says yes, it is chukas agoy, but this is an exception. Ela kaven diksiv srefa be'oraisa. Since we have a source in Jewish literature, we'll see what this is in a second, that burning is something we did as well. Dichsiv is a posik in Yirmiyahu, when he's talking about Tzidkiyahu, he says, and I brought you the whole posik at the bottom, B'shalom Tamuz, he says, you'll die in peace, ukumis refois avoysecha amalachim arishonim ashayu lepanecha, kein yisrufu lecha, you will have your things burnt just like they have their things burnt. So we see this is something that we also did. The Gemara concludes, Lav minayhu kagamrinan. We didn't get it from them. We obviously have it independently. Therefore, even though, yes, it is chukat agoy, but we have an independent minigun, it's not a problem, because it's in our Torah. Now, this is a stira, because the Gemara in Avodah Zarah said clearly that the burning of the kings, the non-Jewish burning of the king's thing, is not chukat agoy, and in Sanhedrin it says, it is chukat agoy. So, how do you resolve this difference? The Gemara does not resolve this difference. This, however, is picked up, unsurprisingly, by Tosfos. And we're going to discuss why they would have done this. Tosfos picks this up and says, aha! You see from this contradiction that there are two types of chukat agoy. Two types of chukat agoy. See what Tosfos says in number 8. And I came into chsiv strefa. Tema, says to Tosfos, this is very strange. The mashmahacha, it sounds here in Sanhedrin, the afal gav de chukahi, it is indeed chukasagoi. Kevin de chsib oraisa shari, since it's written in our Tanakh, then we're allowed to do it independently. However, he picks up, like we said, of a perik kama, the mesechas of Avodah Zarah. But look in the first chapter of Avodah Zarah, parech there it asks, to shreifa chukahi, vahaksiv, ubachokasechem loiselechu, umasik, and there it concludes, says Tosfos, lav chukahi. So what's going on? Is it or isn't it? And he resolves as follows. For Yesh Loima, the Hafam over there in Avodah Zarah, when he said it's not Chukat Agoy, Ka'ama, what it's saying is, Lav Chukahi L'Shem Avodah Kachavah. It's not idolatrous. It's not an Avodah Zarah. Do you have a chukal avodas kachavim? Because if it was avodah zara, afinu huksiv baraisa lo yhava mahani. Even if it was written in the Torah, it wouldn't help. Lots of things they did in the Torah at the time of the first place of Midrash were avodah zara. Just because of the fact it's written in Tanakh doesn't make it okay. So there it's saying it's not a chag for avodah zara. Aval hacha, but here in Sanhedrin, when it says it is chukat agoi, it's talking about a different kind of chukat agoi. Here it's saying it's a different kind of chukat agoi. There are two types. There's non-Jewish customs which are rooted in idolatry, and there are non-Jewish customs which are rooted in something else. What is, and both of them are prohibited. But you have to know which one it is. What is that something else? So the Tosfos in Avodah Zarah, which is the parallel Tosfos in number 9, identifies this. And we have to think about this carefully. Ulakach Pirishli, the Re explains, the Trei Gavni Chukah Havu. There are two types of Chukah Hagoy. Echad She'oisim L'Shem Chok La'Avodah Kachavim. One is clearly idolatrous in origin. The Echad She'oisim L'Shem Dat Hevel V'Shtut Shelahem. And one is just sound a complete nonsense.
That's what you call
superstition. Oh. So you see both of these are prohibited, says Tosfos. Avodah Zarah is one thing, but there's another thing, which is sound shtut, hevel, nonsense. That's also called chukat agoy, you're not allowed to do that. How are we going to identify what's nonsense? Meaning, if we talk about Halloween, which we're not talking about today, really. But you can say Halloween is rooted in very strong pagan background, and also was adopted by a Christian understanding of All Hallows Eve, and where the ghosts come out. You can talk about where that's going to be a pagan festival. But Thanksgiving? Is Thanksgiving based in Avodah Zarah, yes or no? We'll see. We'll see a discussion of that. But even if it's not based in Avodah Zarah, does it have any kind of rational basis? You might turn around and say, yes, it does. 100%. Makes a lot of sense.
Historical
national basis. Okay? Just like you might say, why did they burn, that we'll see soon a source saying, why did they burn the property of the king? It was a sign of covet to say nobody else is allowed to use this property because this is special for the king, and therefore anyone else would use the kind of ma'ila, a kind of abuse of sacred property, therefore they burnt it. So maybe we'll say Thanksgiving is not based on shtus for hevel. But what about eating turkey? Eating turkey. What's that based on? So you're going to say the original pilgrims, the turkeys, and raising turkey in the early colonists and the Indians, the Native Americans saw them to hunt turkey, etc. But is that like a real thing, or is that really a shtus for heaven?
So one thing, if there's any dispatch on turkey only was in America.
Right.
That they eat on Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Mostly the things that the Indians taught them you could
right.
eat.
Right. Maize and turkey. Right.
There was a real question if they were going to survive.
Good, I agree. But is that, according to Tosfos, a good enough reason that it doesn't make it today, in 2016, a shtus for hevel? That's going to be a question. And we'll see the modern-day poskim are coming up on this question. Rav Moshe Feinstein will see it on this as well. Yes? We'll see. Everybody used to celebrate Thanksgiving in America. Even the most yeshivish of yeshivish. Not just yeshiva. Yeshiva University is not chiddush. Okay, but we'll see others as well.
But Thanksgiving is not a universal holiday. I come from Canada. We don't celebrate that.
Correct. There is a Canadian Thanksgiving, but hardly anybody in Canada is interested in it. Which is interesting. We'll talk about Thanksgiving in a minute. But just understand the position of Tosfos. He says there are two types of chukat agoy. One is avodah zarah based, and one is shtus for hevel based. However, this is not adopted by everybody. Look in the Rambam. The Rambam has a very different take on chukat agoy, and he doesn't make this distinction between avodah zarah and not avodah zarah. In fact, he doesn't really even mention avodah zarah explicitly at the end. Have a look in number 10. Ein holchim v'chukayt ha'oydei kochavim. Don't follow the ways of the Ovdei Kochavim. And it's always difficult to know when it says Ovdei Kochavim whether the Mephoroshim mean Dafka idolaters or they mean non-Jews, because don't forget, a lot of the Sforim that we have, including the Rambam, we would have to go through all of the different Gersals, were censored. And the Christians took out the word Goy or Min or things like that. And they put in Ovdei Kochavim because they were very sensitive to this. But anyway, the Rambam says you can't follow the ways of idolaters or non-Jews, and there'll be a big difference there. The Lime Adamim Lahem, you can't look like them. Loi b'melbush, not in the way they dress. V'loi b'shar, b'seyar, sorry, not in the way that they do their hair. V'kiyotze v'hem, or anything similar. Sh'ne'emar, loi se'elcho b'chukas ha'goyim. V'ne'emar, and he says, v'chukas se'echem, loi se'leichu. V'ne'emar, he says, yisham elechal pentin akish achreyem. Don't follow the non-Jews. It doesn't sound from this, as we'll see in a minute, it's anything to do with Avodah Zorah. The hakol the inyan echad hu. It's all one idea. Matir shelo yidam elahem. We shouldn't be like them. Eliyihi haYisrael mugdal mihen. A Jew should be different from them. V'yadua b'malbusha. You should know that he's a Jew by the way he dresses. It seems to be as much about the Jews looking different as not following the non-Jews. B'malbush u'b'shar masav. A Jew's action should be different. K'moshu hu mugdal mihen b'madau u'b'dadeyosa. Where in the way that he thinks and understands and his beliefs. V'chein hu oimer, v'abdil etchem min ha'amim. This is nothing to do with non-Jews, direct. Nothing to do with idolatry. I will make you different from all the other nations. V'lo yilbash v'malbush ha'miyuchad lahem. A Jew must never wear clothes which are specific to non-Jews. V'lo yigdal tzitzis roisha. You shouldn't grow his hair. K'mo tzitzis roisham, like they grow their hair. V'lo yigaleach min ha'tzadim v'yaniach ha'seyar ba'emsa. He shouldn't shave the sides and leave the hair at the top. Like they do, for Zenik Rabluris, this is what did I say it was called before? The Mohawk, yeah, that kind of thing. V'loy galei chaser micheneged panav, umi oizen la oizen, he shouldn't shave the hair around the ears, the anir chaperim, and I'll try to leave it at the back, maybe like you said, the tonsure, kideres your oizen hain. V'loy yidnem a kaimus kibinyan haichal shel ha'akam, he shouldn't even build like the haichal shel akam. We shouldn't have architecture that looks like a church. Interesting. Some of the shuls that I've been to in my life do look a little bit like churches. Kedei shichansu behem rabim, kamo shehem oisim. We shouldn't make that kind of building so that the people will gather here. V'chola oisim eilu kiyotze behem loike. This is all an isidor raisa. Now, the Rambam seems to say that Jews just have to be different. They're not allowed to look the same, act the same, think the same. This could be, by the way, one of the key sources as to why certain parts of the Jewish community, Dafka dress differently to the non-Jews. If you're going to wear a long black coat and a strimal, etc., etc., that looks different. The question is, did that look different 400 years ago in Poland? Or did that Dafka look the same? In which case you'll have to think, well, did they? Exactly, did they look the same as the Polish? So maybe they wore different things, maybe they always wore things which were 300 years out of date. Dafka to look different, that could be, based on the Rambam. But the Rambam doesn't make a distinction here, apparently, between Avodah Zorah and not Avodah Zorah. There are people who understand the Rambam to be only talking about Avodah Zorah, but there are people who understand. Otherwise, the Poshim understand. Otherwise, for the Rambam, it's not clear exactly how this works. But the Ran, which we'll see, is important because this is the way the Shulchan Aruch paskens. The Ran explicitly rejects Tosfos and says no. We are only going to prohibit Chukas HaGoy if it has some Shmek somewhere of Avodah Zorah. There has to be Avodah Zorah somewhere. Unlike Tosfos. Look at number 11. Sorti is al malachi v'lo midarchei mori. Einu midarchei mori. It's not a problem to burn the property of the king. L'chush l'loi sasei kemaseim. We're not worried about the posik l'loi sasei kemaseim. L'fi sh'loi asra taira ela chukai shel avodas kachavim. The Gemara only prohibited things that Avodah Zorah is involved in Avodah Zorah. The Eilud Varim shall hevel ubatala v'chulam yesh behem tzorech la'avodas kachavim. But only things where there is some need, some connection, even if they're nonsense and stupid, there has to be some connection to Avodah Zorah. Aval dvarim shall tam, but once you can give a sensible reason for it, sharu. That's not a problem for us. Ubesreifa, this is your question, sreifa ala malachim tam eka. And there are very sensible reasons why they burned the king's property. Lisrof lechvoidam, klei tashmisham, they used to burn their kelim. Loimer, as if to say, she'ein adam acher asui lishtamesh b'mash and lishtamesh b'ahu. No one else can use what the king used. This is not some kind of weird Avodah Zorah ritual. It makes perfect sense. And therefore for us, says the Ram, this is not a problem. Therefore you have basically two positions. Tosfos say that even chukim which are based not on Avodah Zorah but on something nonsense are prohibited. And the Ram says, no, there has to be, in order to be prohibited, some Avodah Zorah connection. But if it has any legitimate, rational reason, which is not Avodah Zorah related, then it's fine. How does a sir? Yes, sir. Right, exactly. Exactly, not calling the king by name. Have a look at number 12. 12 is the Shulchan Aruch. We'll have a look at the Shulchan Aruch, and then we'll have a discussion about Thanksgiving. The Shulchan Aruch rules, certainly the Ramah, possibly also the Beit Yosef, rules like the Ram. The Ma'arik also takes this view. Number 12, says the Shulchan Aruch, Ein hochim mechukas ha'ovdei kochavim. Don't follow the ways of ovdei kochavim. V'loy medamim lehem, don't be like them. Lo yilbash malbush hamiyuchad lehem. He's quoting really from the Rambam. Don't wear clothes which are like them. V'lo yigdav tzitzis roisho kamo tzitzis rosham. V'lo yigalech me'apstadim v'yaneh chaseh ba'emtah. This is all we saw in the Rambam. Haircuts, styles, etc. V'lo yigalech haseh me'negeh panav, me'oizin le'oizin, v'yaneh ha'pera. V'lo yibneh v'koymeh kibinyin ha'heicholah shal ovdei kochavim. K'dei sheichanzu behem rabim kamo sheheim oizin. Mamash, the wording of the Rambam. Now, what's interesting is that, I'm not getting too technical into this, but the Beit Yosef on which the Shulchan Aruch is based, clearly Paskins like the Ram, which leads many of the Mephoshim to say that even though he sounds like the Rambam, maybe the Rambam also is going in this way like the Ram. But the Ramah for the Ashkenazim is very, very clear. Says the Ramah, Hagar, Eliyahu Mufdol Mehem B'Mavushav, he just adds in, a Jew should be different in the way they dress, U'B'Shah Ma'asav in the way they act. The kol ze ein osa ella b'dava shenagabo v'avis kachavim. The shum priestess. He says the hat. This is osa because of some non-Jewish idolatrous issue on which there was a priestess. A lot of non-Jewish festivals all are connected with priestess in some way. And he says if there was a priestess, if there was some kind of lack of tzniut or a general immorality involved, that was prohibited. Kagoin, like what they used to do, shenagu v'lelvush malbushim adumim. They used to wear red clothes. For whom malbush sarim ukadon, this was the kind of princely clothes. Ukadon elazer malbush priests. Or b'damashenagul minhag lachoik, or for something that was a minhag and a choik that ain't hamadava and is irrational. The ikal amechush, because then we're worried they about this mishum darchei mori sheyesh b'shemet avodas kachavim, that there's some kind of idolatrous practice going on, lurking there, mi'avosein. So again, he says, like the Ram, there has to be some kind of idolatrous something way back for you to pick up on that. Aval. There's two things. He says, number one, if it's parut, you can't do it. Number two, if it makes no sense and you think there might have been a pagan origin, you can't do it. Aval, dava shenagu l'to'elet. But if you see the non-Jews do something for a good reason, like driving on one side of the road, or he says, Kagon Shidarchan Shikal Mishahu Rofe, doctors, he says, wear special clothes. Rofe Mumcha. Yeshlo Malbish Miyuchad. The doctors and the nurses wear special clothes. Shinikabo Shihu Rofe Uman. And you can see from that that they're a doctor, still today. Musul al-Bosh, the Lavsh. You're not allowed, you have no problem wearing those clothes. Ah, but that's the minhag of the non-Jews. Yeah, but it makes sense. There's nothing remotely connected with Avodah Zarah that a doctor will wear doctor's clothes or a lawyer will wear a wig. And a gown and whatever in court. Clearly these are clothes adopted for sensible, I don't know how sensible it is to wear a white curly wig, but that's what they did to show that back in the day white curly wig was a sign of covert. So that's what they wear in England. If you're going to court, if you're a barrister, you have to wear a wig. If you don't wear the wig, the judge will not listen to you. He will, in fact, he won't tell you that you're not dressed right. He'll say to you, I can't hear you. That's the minute there. You say, I can't hear you if you haven't got your wig on. So that's it. If a judge ever says to you, I can't hear you, you'll know to run home and get your shape on. Okay, fine. He said, that's fine, because that makes sense. The chen she'oisim is shum covered, or anything people doing for covered, or tam acher, if you could find another sensible reason why the non-Jews do this, mutter. This is all fine. Well, the chen amr, that's why they said, soifin al malachim ve'ein bo mishum darchem. That's why they're allowed to burn the kings. A property. So there you have a clear stack in the Shulchan Aruch, which is that only if there's an Avodah Zarah involved, or if there's priestess involved, then it's a problem of Chukas HaGoy. But if it makes sense, and there's no Avodah Zarah involved, it's absolutely fine. So Jews can wear sneakers, and Jews can drive on the same side of the road as non-Jews, all these things that non-Jews do, but there's no Avodah Zarah, and there's no priestess, and it makes sense, that's where you can do it. Quite famously, the Vilna Gaon rejected this. The Vilna Gaon took issue with the Ramah, and indeed with most of the Rishonim, as the Vilna Gaon sometimes did. And he writes, I'm not getting into the whole thing in number 13, but in number 13 he basically says, I don't agree. And anything that non-Jews do, basically is Osa, unless we have a source for it too, or unless we would have done it independently of them. And therefore he clearly follows the Psak, which is much more machmir than the Ramah, and says, I'm sorry, you can't do anything the non-Jews do unless you can show it has a Jewish source. Or it could have had a Jewish source. Okay? One of the nafkaminas, by the way, for this, is that there are minhagim, obviously, to bring trees into the shul on Shavuos. And according to the Ramah, that's nice. It's a minhag that we've had for many years. There are midrashim that talk about this. The problem is, the Vilna Gaon will say, well, one second. This is an avodah zara minhag as well. This is a minhag of the non-Jews. And we don't really have a clear independent source for doing this. And there are non-Jews with their trees in their places of worship as well on their holidays. And there are many shuls which were very active. They wouldn't bring trees into the shul on Shavuot. They would maybe bring grass or flowers, but not trees, anything but trees. And therefore, the minhag, the Yekedos used to have trees in the shul, but other people did not have trees, and that could be based on whether you're following the Vilna Gaon or not. Yes, the tree, the Asherah, the Christmas tree, is based in pagan Asherah worship very clearly, and therefore this is part of the this is part of that machlokas. Additionally, I would add, even though most of the Achronim do not follow the Vilna Gaon, I brought you a reference to the Sri De Eishta that says actually most people do not follow the Gra, they're mostly Maker like the Ramah, but some do. But additionally, there's a separate issue, which is a Jew is not allowed, this is not part of Kokas Agoy, but a Jew is not allowed to take part in any celebration where non-Jews are doing Avodah Zorah. Okay? Yeah, could be like a Christian, if you say Christianity is Avodah Zorah, which begs the question, what is Christianity? But if you were to go to any party, meaning this is nothing to do with a Avodah Zorah festival, if you were to go to a, I don't know, if you were to say that Hinduism was Avodah Zorah, which is a discussion which we need to have, it's not so poshut, and there was a Hindu birthday party of a friend at which they were doing Avodah Zorah at that party, there would be a halachi problem for the Jew to be there, even though it's a birthday party. But you're there celebrating somewhere where the non-Jews are doing Avodah Zorah. But again, I'm not saying that Hinduism is Avodah Zorah. We have to discuss that. But that's a separate issue. So again, you're going to have to ask about Thanksgiving. Is this a festival on which non-Jews do Avodah Zorah? In which case, can I be part of this festival? Even if it's not Chukas HaGoy. We have to ask that as well. Other halakhic issues before we get into a discussion of Thanksgiving. Let's look at the other side of the coin. There is a very major hashkafic issue of Hakaras HaTov. Thanksgiving is an opportunity for the Jews of America to appreciate the fact, don't forget these, most people, you know, in America, most Jews in America came, as you well know, from places in Poland and Europe where there was no religious freedom, and therefore to go to a place where there was all of a sudden freedom to be a Jew and to live a Torah life, the people felt, I still feel there was an enormous Hakaras HaTov to be in a Malchus Shel Chesed, and some people take that very, very seriously, understandably. But on the other side, there are issues we haven't even raised. Are you ever allowed to celebrate any festival or any occasion based on the non-Jewish calendar? We will see this in a minute. This could be a birthday or an anniversary or anything. Is that allowed in halacha or not? Are you allowed to add any new celebration to the Jewish year, even in the Jewish calendar, which could apply to Yom HaAtzmaut, or Yom HaZikaron, or Yom HaShoah, or any of these dates, because maybe that's a problem. And another problem, which we haven't mentioned, but we just need to mention slightly, is, okay, even if you don't have a problem with Thanksgiving, can you bichlal eat turkey? Because turkey has no Masorah going back longer than 400 or 500 years. Because somebody arrived in America in the New World, and they discovered these new birds, and we know that there is no clear guidance in the Torah as to what is a siman and what isn't a siman for a kosher bird, unlike there is for a kosher animal. And the Torah simply gives you a list of non-kosher birds and says, don't eat these. Okay? We have a Masorah for many birds going back to Chazal that these are fine because they're not part of this list of non-kosher birds. But we can't have a Masorah for something we discovered 1,000 years after the Talmud. And therefore, how do we know that the turkey is indeed kosher? So people have said, well, it's just like a big chicken. It's the same kind of thing. And it does. And Chazal gave guidance as to what is and isn't a kosher bird. And some people say, well, turkey checks all the boxes and that's fine, therefore it's kosher. Other people say no. And as you probably know, there are Jews today who do not eat turkey. Jews who have long family been hagging not to eat turkey. I have friends who didn't eat turkey ever. As far as I'm aware of, Hershel Shachter doesn't eat turkey because of the Masorah issue. And therefore, this is a widespread question. I think Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, if I'm not wrong, had no issue in per se with Thanksgiving, but he had a problem with the turkey because of the kashrus issue of the turkey, not because of Chukas HaGoy. So this is a separate question. Are you ever able to eat turkey even the day before Thanksgiving? Yes.
We had a personal situation in our family. It just so happened that my husband's family arrived from Nazi Germany, November of 1938,
okay,
to the United States.
Wow.
And every year my mother-in-law, of blessed memory, who was the most wonderful, wonderful woman in the world, would make a Thanksgiving dinner just for a Suda Taidah.
That's also a Suda Taidah. So then you have a Shaila. Are you allowed to make a legitimate Suda that happens on the same day as another one? And Rav Moshe has a whole tshuva on this. Rav Moshe has a tshuva, the first tshuva about Thanksgiving from Rav Moshe in 1953, didn't deal per se with Thanksgiving, it dealt with can you schedule a wedding, or a bar mitzvah, or whatever, for Thanksgiving because everybody's off work. Or is that a problem? Because it's convenient. They asked the shaila, can you daven late on a day where nobody goes to work because it's a non-Jewish holiday? Yeah, and by the way, there were people who were absolutely crazy against this, that there should be a later davening on a Sunday just because it's a non-Jewish day of rest. And objected strongly to having late davening. That kind of fell away, that objection, over the years, and I'm not aware of many people who still have it, but that was a question. Yeah.
So I just finished it. What happened was, so for years and years she did the turkey, and it was absolutely scrumptious, and we all looked forward to it, and other family members, a brother came from out of town, and it wasn't a Shabbos or a Yontif, so it was a time for people to travel and could be together. Anyway, to make a long story short, as the family grew and some of the grandchildren married and newcomers came, Haredi, Chazanim, turkey, oh my God, they went berserk. One developed an allergy to turkey.
That's handy.
Yeah, one couldn't, then she started making a roast in addition to the turkey. Oh. Anyway, after a while, she got older and it was the whole thing, you know, it was like...
Okay, Rupture and Reconstruction by Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, which is an essay he wrote in 1991 about why the Judaism of our grandparents that seemed to be fine for the frum and connected religious Jews of the 1930s, why that somehow is no longer acceptable for the grandchildren of these people in the 1990s, 2000s. The whole essay relates to that. It's called Rupture and Reconstruction. You can get it free online. You can just download it, just type Rupture and Reconstruction. It's a 35, 40 page essay. It's an iconic piece, which Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the son of Rav Yosef Ben Soloveitchik, wrote about 20 years ago. And he deals exactly with this question in a number of different ways. Have a look at that essay. Let's talk about Thanksgiving. Who am I, Katanti, to be an Englishman talking about Thanksgiving? We do not celebrate Thanksgiving. In England, we don't feel we have that much to give thanks for, maybe. Except for maybe those people who give thanks for leaving Europe, whatever. But in America, Thanksgiving has its origins in 1621, with the pilgrim celebrations in Plymouth Plantation, and the colonists celebrated the harsh winter there. This, anyway, is the Masorah. 1620 to 21 was a harsh winter, and the local Native Americans showed them how to survive, because basically they were clueless. They didn't know, they were using English planting techniques and hunting techniques, and the Indians said to them, Native Americans, this is, you're all going to die if you do this. And therefore they taught them to hunt turkey, they taught them to plant maize. There are different Masorahs, whether the colonists shared their food with the Native Americans, or the Native Americans shared their food with the colonists. That depends on which gears you use, depending on your take on these things. But that's basically how it starts. Have you had a question?
Yeah. Assuming that Jews would give thanks on Thanksgiving to God.
Yes.
The Christians, do they thank?
Oh, we'll see that right now. Let's look at the historical issue here. Go over the page to page 4. There was a second Thanksgiving celebration a few years later after a long drought in the summer. This one was in July. And there were similar celebrations through the 1600s. But nothing happened kavua, in a fixed way, until the late 1700s. Bless you. In 1777, during the Revolutionary War, there was a national proclamation of Thanksgiving, which was given by the pre-state Continental Congress. Look at how it reads. It is therefore recommended to the legislative or executive powers of these United States, this is pre-state, okay, to set apart Thursday, the 18th day of December, for solemn thanksgiving and praise, that at one time and with one voice the good people may express the grateful feelings of their hearts, consecrate themselves to the service of their divine benefactor, and that together with their sincere acknowledgments and offerings they may join the penitent confession of their manifold sins, whereby they have forfeited every favor and their humble and earnest obligation that it may please God through the merits of JC, and there's a whole discussion there, mercifully to forgive and blot them out of remembrance, that it may please him graciously to afford his blessing on the government of these states respectively, and prosper the public council of the whole, to prosper the means of religion for the promotion and enlargement of the kingdom, which consisteth in righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Ghost. Now, that is the first proclamation of thanksgiving, and it clearly has very strong Christian references. Now, the first, according to some, President of the United States was John Hanson. John Hanson was the President of the Confederation prior to the state, and he basically declared that this should be adopted, but not in December, but the fourth Thursday of November. About 5 or 6 years later, when Washington was already the President of the new state, Congress proposed it, and Washington issued a new and toned down declaration of Thanksgiving, which actually took out many of the references to Christianity, which is interesting. Look at what he said just underneath. He says, Washington said in 1789, he set November the 26th as Thanksgiving that year, we may then all unite in rendering unto him our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation, for the signal and manifold mercies and the favorable interpositions of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war, because by then, of course, they'd beaten the British, for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general, for all the great and various favors which he has been pleased to confer upon us, and also that we may unite in most humbly offering out prayers and supplications to the great Lord and ruler of nations, and beseech him to pardon our national and other transgressions. Now, it clearly still talks about God, but it's not about a Christian God as such. It's about the Lord and the one who helps us, etc. And therefore he toned down the Christian rhetoric of the previous declaration. But even then, Thomas Jefferson was unhappy with this and said it was too religious. Still, it was too religious. But that's how it stood from then. There were other attempts during the 1800s. Thanksgiving was not fixed yet. Even though Washington wanted it to be fixed, it was still very sporadic. It kind of fell out of favor through the 1800s. There were, in the southern states, it was more celebrated. Okay, and there you can look, I brought your sources at the bottom, there were more overt Christian references. In fact, there was a famous case in one of the southern states where the Jews objected to the very Christian nature of Thanksgiving being foisted upon them, and there the governor said, sorry, I thought this was a Christian country, and the Jews said, well, you know, not so posh, so this is a Christian country, and there's a lot of back and forth during the Civil War about this. But Lemaitre, Abraham Lincoln, finally fixed it. In 1863, Lincoln issued a Thanksgiving proclamation that Thanksgiving should be celebrated annually at the end of November. And that is what has happened ever since 1863, with one small change, that in 1934, Roosevelt decided that we had to bring Thanksgiving a little earlier so people will shop more and it won't be too close to Christmas, and therefore he said that it should only be on the second to last Thursday in November in order to increase consumer spending, and therefore there's a little bit of a change there, and that is how it has ended up. So when there are five Thursdays in November, Thanksgiving is on the second to last Thursday, not the last Thursday, as indeed it will be next year. Just an interesting historical note, a few years ago, of course, the Jews of America said full Hallel with a bracha on Thanksgiving because it fell on Hanukkah. And what they dubbed Thanksgiving was in 2013 celebrated in America. So then they had no shilas. They were allowed to say Hallel with a brocha. Everybody was happy. But that won't happen again until 2017. Now, therefore, is Thanksgiving a Christian festival or not? Does it have roots in Avodah Zarah or not? And if it doesn't have roots, is it based on Shtus VeHevel, which will, for Tosfos, still be a problem? So first of all, who decides this? Do we decide whether Thanksgiving is a religious festival, or does American law decide? Well, Rav Menashe Klein in number 14, he has a shuva here. He says, "Yesh la'asur l'achilas tarnagol hoidu turkey for Yom Chagam." And he has a whole shuva about that. And the first question is, "V'hinei mitam dina d'malchus adina or mitam eva lo yadati imishum ze yesh lanu limnoi menektov da'asar." He says, we can't just hold back because of Dina de Malchus Adina. Dina de Malchus Adina doesn't stop us from keeping halacha. And the fact that the American courts have declared Thanksgiving as a secular holiday doesn't mean that it is a secular holiday. The American courts have also, I gave you references, declared that Good Friday is a secular holiday, as is Christmas and Hanukkah. So the fact that the American Supreme Court has declared Hanukkah to be a secular holiday does not mean in halacha that Hanukkah is a secular holiday. And therefore, Rav Klein says here that if anyone's going to decide this, it's going to be us and not them, and Dina de Malchus Adina is not going to be the machria. Go over the page, please, onto page 5. We'll come back to Rav Klein in a minute. Rav Yehuda Henkin, of course people may know Rav Henkin, lives in Kiryat Moshe today. He rules in his tshuvas that Thanksgiving is, as far as we're concerned, not a religious holiday. This is Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin. This is the...
No, but his father's one of the...
Yes, correct, correct. We'll see that Rabbi Yosef Henkin, his grandfather as well, they included it in the Ezra Torah calendar that Thanksgiving was not. That's correct, absolutely. It's in the Masorah of his grandfather as well. That, and he says that even if there are Americans who celebrate it religiously, which maybe there are, there will be people who hold hands and say prayers and all sorts of things at Thanksgiving, that doesn't make it a religious holiday. However, that's only if you follow the Ramah. If you follow the Vilna Gaon, the Gaon is Helfen. It's all over. Because it clearly has no roots in Jewish sources, and is not something that the Jews necessarily would have done on their own. And therefore, if you follow the Vilna Gaon, then clearly you cannot celebrate Thanksgiving. But Rav Henkin there, in his tshuva, says, but most Achronim do not follow the Vilna Gaon, and he gives various different reasons why that is, because the Gaon argues with Rishonim, etc. There are some aforeshim that say, okay, Thanksgiving is acceptable according to the Ramah, but turkey is not. I brought you here from Rav David Cohen. Basically, he says the turkey bit is nonsense, and therefore, even if you celebrate the Thanksgiving, you cannot celebrate with a turkey. And he's clearly going like Tosfos in that sense, that any chuk which is based on nonsense is also osur. But Rav Henkin again then says, no, the turkey has a svara. They eat the turkey, like you said before, because the turkey was part of their original celebration, and it's a symbolic reminder of the gratitude. However, Rav Henkin does point out, like we said before, that if there are Christians there who are celebrating Thanksgiving in a religious way, depending on whether Christianity is a Avodah Zarah or not, we have to discuss, then it may be a problem for you to be there as their Thanksgiving meal, because then there's a religious celebration taking place. But if it's a bunch of Jews sitting together, eating turkey, giving thanks, then Rav Henkin certainly will say that there is, that's not a religious festival. There are three basic poskim who talk about this. Yes?
Two questions. Why does David Cohen say that it's an act of shmata?
Because this is the turkey has no svara. The turkey is just spam. I mean, you really know if they were eating turkey in 1600. It's the Masorah. That's the Midrash, if you like. That's the myth of how it started. It doesn't really make any sense today to eat turkey. Giving thanks makes sense. Why shouldn't you give thanks? I understand, but now there are lots of foods that are made to America. I mean, in Turkey, now everyone all over the world eats turkey. Unless you say, and it's actually interesting, that the word hodu, of course, is turkey, hodu l'ashem ki tov, but that's for sure, hevel, shtus, for hevel, shtus. Yes.
If the Gentiles are not referring to turkey,
yes,
and they're just referring to God, and they're saying in general,
yes,
what's the prohibition of being with them?
So that depends on whether Christianity is a Avodah Zarah in and of itself, which we have to have a proper discussion about, which we have to see. Three poskim. Let's finish with these three poskim. Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Huttner, and Rav Moshe Feinstein. These are probably three of the biggest names of America in the second half of the 20th century who deal with Thanksgiving. Rav Soloveitchik's tzak is very straightforward. He says in number 15, or rather, Rav Shechter writes in Nefesh HaRav, Das Rabbeinu haita shemutar lechol basar hodur turki, okay, basof November, beyond Thanksgiving. Rav Soloveitchik clearly said, it's mutter to eat turkey and celebrate Thanksgiving. Okay, ve'eveinu, and we understood from this, sheladasai ein bebasa hoidu baya shel chisaron the Torah. We understood from this that clearly if he allows you to eat turkey on Thanksgiving, he allows you to eat turkey. So you can see from this, Rav Soloveitchik had no problem on the Masorah issue either. Ve'chein she'ein ba'achilasam beyond Thanksgiving mishum chukas agoyim. So too, clearly Rav Soloveitchik held there's no problem with chukas agoy. Ve'chein she'manu she'haita gam das aviv. Hagon Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, we also heard from the Rav, says Rav Shechter, that his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, also had no problem with Thanksgiving. However, he adds, the Ayin Igris Moshe should istapek b'zeh. But see Rav Moshe, because Rav Moshe is not so sure about it. He wants you to know that. But clearly, and this is testified by many, many Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Soloveitchik didn't have a problem with celebrating Thanksgiving as far as the way he instructed his Talmidim. He finished shir early on Thanksgiving so he could catch a flight back to Boston. I've not managed to get any testimony as to whether Rav Soloveitchik himself sat down with his family at 10, 8, 30, although I can't believe it could be that hard to work out. We just need to ask, you know, Dr. Tova, and she'll tell us what happened in the Soloveitchik home. If I get round to it, I'll ask her, see what she says to me. But everyone knows that the Rav said it was mutter to eat turkey. There is a famous story of the Thanksgiving shir in 1976, which maybe some of you were at that shir, I don't know. You were at the shir?
No, but I know that Soloveitchik, they did serve turkey on Thanksgiving, but he said he didn't eat it, because he didn't like it.
Okay? So here you live, he said that the Rav Soloveitchik did serve turkey on Thanksgiving, but he didn't eat it because he didn't like turkey. There was a famous shir in 1976, which lasted for around 5 hours, on Thanksgiving, where Rav Soloveitchik was most of the time in silent thought, trying to work out a tosfos, and everybody's there kvetching because it's Thanksgiving and it's like 4 or 5 hours. The shamash was passing him little notes saying, you're going to miss your flight, you're going to miss your flight. And he turned around basically and he said, no one can leave this room until we've understood what it is that Tosfos is trying to say. And that was that. And that was the famous Thanksgiving shir of 1976. But so the shir clearly took precedence over Thanksgiving, but Thanksgiving itself was not awesome. That's Rav Soloveitchik. So if you follow the Rav on that, then okay, eat turkey, be happy, and move ahead. And he wasn't the only one, as Jerry said, Rav Henkin Sr., the grandfather, also passed in this way, Rav Silver, Rav Greenblatt, Rav Yehuda Henkin we mentioned before. Rav Huttner is not happy about Thanksgiving. And I've spoken to some of his senior Talmidim, I spoke to one yesterday, that confirmed to me, no, Rav Huttner is not happy with Thanksgiving. Although, Rabbi Breud, in one of his articles I gave you a reference, brings a testimony from one of Rav Huttner's Talmidim that he says that Rav Huttner told him that he could celebrate Thanksgiving. Okay, maybe that was him. Maybe not Rav Huttner, but see what Rav Huttner writes, or rather what is written by him in number 6, he doesn't mention Thanksgiving, in number 16, sorry, he doesn't mention Thanksgiving. But in the index to this piece at the front of the book, it says this is talking about Thanksgiving. Look what he says. Pretty charif. Alodot shelacha. About your question, says Rav Huttner. Im ze d'oraisa or d'rabbonah. First of all, he says, is an issa d'oraisa or an issa d'rabbonah to celebrate Thanksgiving, if that's what he's talking about. Hini kol ha-chakira azoiz, lo titachin ele im hayanidun inyan shel chagiga chad pa'ami. The whole question of whether it's offered the right of the Rabbanon is only if you were celebrating a one-off. Let's say there was a special day in America, there was a day of Thanksgiving. After the Gulf War, President Bush declared a day of Thanksgiving. Today it all looks a little bit strange 10 years afterwards, but whatever. A day of Thanksgiving for the success in the Gulf War. A one-off day, since that you can have a shaila about do we join in, do we not join in. The right of the Rabbanon, etc. A vow. We have a fixed thing here in the Canada. It comes back every year. And it's now in the non-Jewish Canada. There's a new shaila. You've made a new moed. By celebrating this day annually, you've made it a new moed. The chiddush moed shelo'im in the koraseya shel Torah, and making a new moed not based on Torah sources, who min chamoyri chamuros. This is one of the worst things you can ever do. Okay? V'kolze, hayanachon, afilu in tfil zeh haita shel luach shelanu, even if it's on the Jewish calendar, gam ad hayayinyin chamori chamoros kinis kamel. That's one of the worst things you can ever do. Now, based on this, any new moed in the Jewish calendar, Yom HaTzmaut, Yom HaZikaron, could be also, unless of course you say that those days themselves come from Jewish sources, as indeed those who celebrate Yom HaTzmaut and Yom HaShoreim say it's a chiyuv, it's a mitzvah doraita to celebrate Yom HaTzmaut and Yom HaYerushalayim, and therefore there's no shaila, of course it's from Jewish sources. What Rav Rutman would say about that, I don't know, yes.
I don't understand, we know that Chazal said Hanukkah is horrible.
That's called Jewish sources. Chazal had the authority of Lo Sosser in the Torah itself to set new holidays. We are not Chazal. We can't do that, he said. Let's go on and see what he says next. Aval. That's even if it was a Jewish holiday. The Kevan Shigvir Zor, he lefi atarich hanahug, asher me'azu ma'olam hayamina getzlenu lehoisif et ha'tevah lemisparam. Whenever we quote the non-Jewish calendar, we always say lemisparam, the way that they count. And that's not our calendar. B'sha'a shimush ha-rishmi b'tarich ha-nal, b'halo etzem kfirs ha-tarich le'uvde ha-yisoyda shel, and he misses out the word, basing any date of a celebration on a calendar which itself is based on what? How is the non-Jewish calendar counted? Is AD, when you call it AD or CE, then it's clearly based on a Christian Avodah Zorah, if Christianity is Avodah Zorah. Who matn kovet otzem la-Avodah Zorah? This is giving an enormous kovet to Avodah Zorah. Harry Milster the Pshitahi, it's absolutely clear to me, and to anyone with any knowledge, ki chagigas moed hakavu lefi tarich, there, celebrating any date on this non-Jewish calendar date, yesh bo mishum avizrayu. Avizrayu is a strong word. Avizrayu to avodah zarah means it's mamash avodah zarah just to base anything on a non-Jewish date, says Rav Putner. This would be birthdays, anniversaries, certainly Thanksgiving. Once you get into a Shaila of Avodah Zorah, and Avizrayu to Avodah Zorah, you get into the Shaila of not whether Thanksgiving is Mutter, but whether celebrating Shal Thanksgiving is Yaharig Ba'al Yavor. Whether you have to die rather than celebrate Thanksgiving. Which Rav Klein deals with in number 17, which I'm not going to get through in detail, but Rav Klein there was asked a Shaila by somebody who said that there's a pamphlet being put out that celebrating Thanksgiving is indeed Yaharig Ba'al Ya'avor, and what does Rabbi Menashe Klein think about that? And the answer is, I think he goes through that it's definitely also to celebrate Thanksgiving, but it's not Yaharig Ba'al Ya'avor. You don't have to die rather than celebrate Thanksgiving, but he says, clearly Thanksgiving is often, you can read it through there, but as Jerry mentioned before, Thanksgiving was part of the calendar, the Ezra's Torah calendar that was put out by the community in America, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, he put Thanksgiving in the calendar. The annual Agudas Yisrael convention used to always be on Thanksgiving weekend, and turkey was always on the menu. Then, and this is like your story, over the decade, it was on the Thanksgiving weekend, and turkey came off the menu. And now it's Badafka the weekend before the Thanksgiving weekend. And turkey's still off the menu. Or maybe turkey's back on the menu. I don't know. But so things move along. Oh, you can say because it's fixed by the weekend before Thanksgiving, it's still Yaharig Ba'al Ya'avor. Okay? You can write them a letter and see what they say. Rav Moshe Feinstein, let's finish off with Rav Moshe Feinstein, in addition to the 1953 tshuva about having a wedding on Thanksgiving, which he said basically fine, because it's a wedding that's on a day where people are free, he has three tshuvas in the eighth volume, which came out of Igros Moshe. Now the eighth volume itself is something of a controversy, because it came out posthumously, and not everybody's so clear whether Rav Moshe agreed with everything that was written, or would have agreed with everything written in the eighth volume, but that's a separate issue. There are three tshuvas in that volume. In the first tshuva, you can read them yourself, in number 18, he clearly writes that Thanksgiving is not Avodah Zorah, but it is Chukat Hagoy. Okay? It is Chukat Hagoy, and therefore you can't celebrate Thanksgiving. In the second tshuva, in number 19, he clearly writes that Thanksgiving is Musa, it's not, as long as it's not a fixed obligation in that you make it into a chiyuv, in a sense, it's fine. And then they asked him, well, you've just given us two different psakim. Which is it? Is it Osa, Sukkot HaGoy, or is it Musa, and not Sukkot HaGoy? And in the third tshuva, which I've referred to here, he says, he's not sure about the turkey. That's why he said, the turkey could be Sukkot HaGoy, maybe yes, maybe no, but he won't definitively state that it's prohibited to celebrate Thanksgiving occasionally. But to make it a fixed thing, like a chiyuv, he says, that I'm sure is wrong. So maybe every now and then to take a year off, according to Rav Moshe, and not celebrate Thanksgiving, or go to England for the year, yeah, or come to Israel for the year, maybe that will be fine for Rav Moshe. But basically that is the position. People will follow the Rav that they follow. Those who follow Rav Soloveitchik will eat their turkey for Simcha. Those who follow Rav Hutner will have the Shalom. And those who follow Rav Moshe will decide what they do. Next week, please God, we'll go further.